Brought to you by Face to Face Games.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
We have got a super awesome episode for you guys this week. Congratulations for us personally, because we have gruelingly finally got our merch launch. Just for everyone that knows, I know we've been tweeting about it for a while, but we have a very high level of standard what we're trying to do here, and we are happy. And if we're happy, it's time for you guys to be happy. So shirts are here, limited edition. You got till February 10th. Check out the link in the description below, or follow us on Twitter, and we will answer all your merch questions about sizing, colors, feel, whatever you need, we will do it. But we do need you to, if you do want a shirt, you must DM Matty Studios, and I must add you to our Google spreadsheet, otherwise we can't track this. So, that being said, I hope you guys love the stuff, and let's get into the show. It is a standard show this week. And I totally forgot to do the intro where I'm like, I'm Matty Studios.
Oh, am I actually here too? Sorry, I thought I was supposed to be quiet still. I just finished my morning workout. I'm wearing my shirt right now. I'm good to go. And I just came off a hot standard weekend too because I made top 8 of the Sunday Showdown.
Wow, dude. Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening in standard, because I watched the SCG weekend. I know you did too. Previous week, we saw Green Black. Crush. This week we saw kind of the opposite. We saw all the Jeskai Copycat decks adapt and really refine, just kind of like we were saying. It's like we think they're going to refine, they're going to become more aggressive or in terms of protecting the combo, and we're going to see a bit of a combo war going on, or counter war, which
you may even say that these decks have been rogue refined. Oh. That's the best card. I love that card.
Rogue Refiner is excellent.
I started seeing it in the old four-color decks from 2 weeks ago now, and that was the card that felt like was the Mirror Breaker, because as far as keeping up on card advantage goes, it was free because it replaces itself, gives you two energy, which makes your Aether Hubs insanely powerful, but it's a 3-mana 3/2. Like, this is Elvish Visionary with a Dark Confidant on its back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other card that really impressed me was Disallow. I knew that card was going to be good, but... Wow. I'm watching, like you said, last week, you know, we were excited to see, like, higher level players who've got many, many hundreds of reps in with decks, like, start to do some really, really cool tricks. And I watched people disallow triggers on the artifact that sacks a deal of damage, you know, in response to the Sheely Mirror. Just some really awesome stuff. I think the deck is extremely strong, though. And, you know, we didn't see a lot of other decks, which... I know a lot of people were saying that that's the standard trend, you know, week one and then week two counters what week one did, and then we wait for the Pro Tour, but I don't know. What do you think? Like, I feel like people were playing it safe, were they? Or were they just wanted reps with the best deck or perceived best deck?
Well, let me go over some of my highlights from my tournament, because I played Daniel Fournier's list, which is just Jeskai Saheeli. Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to play 4 Disallow in my main deck plus Torrential Gearhulks. So I disallowed a lot of things, but honestly, probably my highlight from the entire tournament was game 3 of round 1. I was playing against my green-white tokens opponent, and I had foolishly sideboarded out all my win conditions. So I didn't have any Nahiris in my deck to deal with the turn 1 Authority of the Council that my opponent played. I boarded out my Torrential Gearhulk so I could have more control and more board sweepers, so I could have, you know, Fumigates and Radiant Flames to deal with all these tokens. And then I forgot that I was actually supposed to win the game at some point, because I wasn't just a control deck. Also, it was game 3, so I was on a time limit. So basically what it came down to is I had expended 2 of my Saheeli Rays already, plussing to keep a Nissa Voice of Zendikar at bay. So plus Saheeli, Scry, tick one to your Nissa so it doesn't get out of hand. I eventually cast a Fumigate and gain 5 or 6 life. I cast a Radiant Flames and get like a 4 for 1, which really isn't a 4 for 1 because I'm just fighting the same Nissa over and over again. Yep. And my opponent realizes that they need to put some more pressure on me, so they start activating their Westvale Abbey. So once they activate their Westfield Abbey for the first time, I check my sideboard and realize, okay, Saheeli is how I'm going to have to win this game. That's it. That's the only way this is going to work. So I decide to play a Felidar Guardian, try and get the beatdowns in, comes into play tapped, and my opponent Stasis snares it. And I was like, okay, well, that plan's off the table. I really have to win with Saheeli and the two Needle Spires in my deck. So I start plussing Saheeli and dealing the damage to my opponent, and they start activating Westfield Abbey, and I think to myself, well, at least we're on the same side here.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, well, you know, we're both trying to hurt your life total, so, yeah. You know, fair's fair. So we go back and forth for a few turns, and I totally bait my opponent into this with double Immolating Glare in my hand, and that's the one in a white destroy target attacking creature. Step one, I ask to read the Westfield Abbey. So I take
you set it up, then it's important.
Exactly. I take a look at it, I flip it over, I'm like, oh, this thing's indestructible. All right, so I put it back, and the next turn I immediately cast Immolating Glare on a token. It leaves my opponent on three creatures. Activates a Healy, do a damage. They're at about 12, and my life total is starting to get pretty low. I'm around, you know, 11 or 12 as well. So then they activate Westfield Abbey, and they go down to 11, and then it comes back to me, and I activate my heal again, target my opponent. They attack me with four creatures this time, and I Immolating Glare again. And I say, wow, I have no idea how I'm going to deal with that Westfield Abbey over there.
And total trap, man.
Yeah.
Just laying a trap.
Exactly. So now we're two turns deep into the setup. And they activate Westfield Abbey again. They have four creatures, and I draw a Radiant Flames off the top. I'm like, sweet. So I sweep the board, and this goes back and forth for another four or five turns until my opponent's at five and activates Westfield Abbey to go to four life.
Wow.
Comes to my turn. I do nothing. I pass a turn. And at the end step, they untap. Before they untap, they activate Westfield Abbey, sacrificing their five creatures to flip their Westfield Abbey, which I then disallow.
Oh, the disallow in Westfield Abbey is gross.
So another mono blue board sweeper. I get a five tokens for one disallow. So my opponent untaps with not many cards in hand, and I also have not many cards in hand, passes the turn back to me, and I draw Harness Lightning. So I activate my Needle Spires, they make a token, I Harness Lightning their token, and hit them for exactly lethal. Yeah, that was round one, and I was like, all I thought to myself was, this tournament can't be this stressful all day. I need to figure out a better way to win. This is going to be way too stressful.
Yeah, well, you did choose to play the deck that's, you know, going to go long. So interesting. Yeah. You know, the one thing that I wanted to talk about is, obviously, I feel like as standard debuts, you know, everybody jumps all over the place and they go after strategies, and sometimes we're proven before the Pro Tour that certain strategies just aren't cutting it, but you know, it does, there's a clear pattern as you start to see cards rise to the top that, you know, these are good cards. They may not have the perfect shell yet, but they're good. So let's talk about two cards, because I think with Wizards' new approach to banning pre-Pro Tour and possibly post-Pro Tour, I don't know if these cards are trapped or that your people could get burned on them. And if they do, I feel like this would be horrible for the game and people. But let's talk about Walking Ballista and Saheeli / the cat. So Ballista to me is a colorless card, goes in any deck, which I personally believe that you could throw that in Saheeli combo if you wanted. You could throw it in a lot of decks. I don't think people realize that it can go in yet. And I think that card is going to be ubiquitous, of just like being Smuggler's Copter. It's just going to be in everything that can run it. And then you got Saheeli, which looks to be fragile combo to some extent, but also very, it's a combo worth protecting. Like, as we saw this week, you can just run six main counterspells and board up to eight or nine after post game and just don't, like you did. I'm not playing any other game. I'm just trying to do this.
And it's actually, in fact, you get more than eight counterspells because you have three or potentially four Torrential Gearhulks. So your curve just works out where you Revolutionary Rebuff the first thing that's not an artifact, then you disallow the first thing that's relevant, and then you're already at Torrential Gearhulk mana for rebuff or disallow again. So really, it is like a much slower version of Mana Leak, Snapcaster, Mana Leak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's when we first saw Snapcaster Hulk, which I call him. I mean, that's what I thought. I thought, though, it's funny, as we keep seeing cards, and we talked about, you know, a little bit about it last week about, like, the converted mana cost. Or maybe that was the time travel episode that got lost. I can't remember. But
it's been a trip.
There's been too many trips, man. I feel like Wizards keeps making cards more expensive, and we keep saying, oh man, they've ruined it. Yet, continually, maybe it's in relationship to other cards that these cards exist in, but they still are very powerful. So, like, talking of Ballista specifically, that's due for a second. Do you think this card is currently power level that's dangerous in terms of potential banning, or could be? Or is it just like, this is kind of like the bar that we're in right now?
I thought about that, and personally, I wanted to play Walking Ballista in my main deck of my Jeskai Saheeli combo the night before, but I wasn't feeling great, and I didn't really have time to test it. Not that I test things, I just like to do them. That's how I live my life. You guys all know that. Come on.
We just get hyped, and then we're like, let's have fun, and who cares?
Exactly. That's the name of the game for us, at least. So I feel like if I had of went with my gut and put the three Walking Blisters in the main and maybe like trimmed the third Gear Hulk and trimmed maybe a Harness Lightning, I would have won the tournament. And the reason I feel that is because Walking Ballista is exactly the tool I needed to fight the two Mardu decks that one beat me in the Swiss and one knocked me out of the top eight. Two different players, very similar deck. The incidental damage from Mardu right now is so, so strong that before you know it on turn four, you're at three or six life.
Oh, 100% agreed. I've been playing a couple of games on MTGO and the red slash Mardu decks are just... It's like burn. They get you down fast. And if you don't have a plan, you know, you're in trouble. My whole thing is I still feel like Authority of the Councils is a main deckable. I didn't say it should be, but it's a main deckable card that potentially in the meta seems to work really good. And it's not designed to stop anything. It's designed to buy time. And it's just like, you know, when you're playing that Jeskai shell, you want time. I just want to draw into cards. I want to be able to draw into my combo with protection. I want to be able to survive long enough to Snapcaster, Gearhulk, my stuff, you know. This is like where I look at that card. I look at Thalia. I look at Ballista. They all kind of add that layer one of protection where sometimes I feel like the removal, because it's so conditional, just doesn't do. Like, certain removal just is dead in certain hands, where Ballista isn't.
Yep, well, the thing that I liked about Ballista, and instead of playing Ballista, I played to beat Ballista, so I actually had Ceremonious Rejections in my sideboard, which all weekend were fantastic, because being on the draw, I could snipe a turn two Ballista, as well as being able to deal with Heart of Kieran on the draw from the aggressive deck. So I was really happy with Ceremonious Rejection. I actually got to reject a Walking Ballista where X equals 4, so an 8 mana for 1 mana counterspell. That was just, you know, living the dream.
Oh, yeah.
But for me personally, in the Jeskai shell, what more do you want in your deck that does nothing than a do-nothing card? Like, when you have a Walking Ballista out on turn two and then you untap, you sit on Disallow plus Revolutionary Rebuff plus Anticipate. But when you get to turn four, you get to sit on those same counterspells plus Glimmer of Genius plus pump your Ballista. And I feel like if you start pumping your Ballista in the control deck, maybe you have a Saheeli in play. Maybe you don't. It doesn't really matter. At this point, your opponent's focus needs to be on getting rid of that Ballista, because you will eventually get it to 20 counters and kill them. And I know this sounds like...
It sounds like fiction.
It sounds unreasonable, but I personally, in the Jeskai Mirror, dealt 24 damage with two Saheeli Rays over two games. So they're just sitting there doing nothing is what this deck does best. And that's what Jeskai has sort of always done best, and then... The next part is that it turns the corner. Yeah. So if you're trying to get into a position where you eventually go like end step Gear Hulk just for literally anything, maybe you counterspell, maybe you Harness Lightning something, you untap, slam a Saheeli Ray and copy your Gear Hulk, you're attacking for 10. Now if you do that and you have had a Ballista in play for 4 turns, they're dead.
Yeah, exactly. I think why I like Ballista so much is if you can get it down early, it gives the Jeskai player that end of turn option. It's I can counter something during their turn. I can pump my Ballista, or I can, you know, anticipate slash
glimmer. Yeah.
Glimmer. I can. So it just allows, like, your opponent doesn't know what you're doing, and you could do anything. And I feel like that's where these cards, like good mana sinks that are possible late game enders, plus removal. I mean, this card's crazy. That's why I wanted to talk about it this week, that I think Ballista is going to break out at the Pro Tour huge. And it's going to be a card that everything is going to have to shape around. Now let's talk quickly about Saheeli, because that's the thing everyone is talking about, that, oh my goodness, this card is broken. Standard will never change. And, you know, with our banner this week, you know, it's a statement of standard. We just got Nyan cats just running all over, man. 10-hour loop.
There are cats everywhere.
They're everywhere, man. Just like scarves in the wind. So what do you think? Do you think that we're going to have a pro tour of Jeskai mirrors? And do you think, as the follow-up, Wizards is going to do something? Because they just set such a line in the sand with where they want Standard to be, and I feel like it kind of backfired a bit. And now you have, I kind of think it's a worse, I don't know if it's worse or not, it's new, so it's fun, we're playing with it, but it's just two decks again, maybe a third.
I completely disagree with you, Maddie.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, and it's great because I can do that, because, what? No, cool. I totally disagree with you, because from playing my Standard Sunday Showdown, which is, you know, one of the more competitive tournaments in Toronto that you get. It's probably the most competitive tournament you get in Toronto on a weekly basis. It was definitely a rock, paper, scissors format, because I dominated the black green decks when I decided to control them. My Jeskai mirror decks or four color mirror decks were the most fun games I've ever played, and it shone through that my experience with twin like decks and control. Even though I said before that I'm more like a combo mid-range player, but my experience with the control decks really gave me an edge in those, and I felt super comfortable playing them, and I could not touch the Mardu decks. Like, I got destroyed. Check this out. In round three, my loss in the Swiss, we played a grand total of three games. All three games ended on turn four.
No way.
Yeah, I died on turn four. Well, I didn't die on turn four, but I conceded on turn four because there was lethal on board and I drew a card that was irrelevant. That's fine. That happens game one with control decks versus aggro decks. Like, no big deal. Game two, actually, for the first time, got to do the old Splinter Twin thing of your opponent taps it on turn three, you have a Sea Helium playing, you just show them the land and the Felidar Guardian. We scoop up and go to game four, or game three, and then I died on turn four again because my Radiant Flames or my one piece of interaction just wasn't enough to beat Scrap Heap Scroungers. So I feel like I could build my deck to beat the Mardu decks, and I feel like I could build my deck to be better against the Mirror or against the four-color Jeskai decks, which are, in my opinion, favored in the Jeskai Saheeli Mirror. Rogue Refiner, like we've said it already once, that card's just insane.
The card's very good.
It's so good. And then getting to copy it later with your Saheeli and then attack for three and draw another card, like it's just super, super good.
Yeah, let's talk about the fact that it's a 3/2.
Like, yeah, exactly. Right? That's why I said Elvish Visionary giving Dark Confidant a piggyback. Like that's how I picture this card. But that's just the baseline. That's just people playing what they feel like they know. This isn't anything new and experimental. This isn't any multiple strategies jammed together. And these are definitely not people that are on the Pro Tour, because all of those people are at the Pro Tour, in fact. So what I think is that the baseline of this rock, paper, scissors, of this blue, white, red versus black, green versus Mardu aggressive deck is a very, very healthy and strong place to start in Standard. And now we're going to see the pros take it to the next level. And I am so excited for this Pro Tour.
I am
too. To watch them evolve the metagame for us, because that's what the Pro Tour is about. Yeah. And the thing that I noticed in all of these matchups is that Fatal Push wasn't a four of in any of these decks. And some of the cards that we expected to be, you know, the big winners either performed exactly the way they were supposed to, i.e. Cat Combo or Torrential Gear Hulk or Disallow, or we found some sleepers like Rogue Refiner and that red concoction as some sideboard tech to beat them, as well as, you know, the Verdurous Gear Hulk plus counter strategy. Like, these are all super, super fun, diverse decks to play, and this is all level one. So I think that Standard is super fun. I think that Standard is super healthy, and I now have two Standard deck built, and I'm excited to play. Like, I'm just super hyped on Standard right now.
So I agree 100% that people know for a while now, I've never really been a Standard player, but through Frontier, strangely enough, I'm coming at Frontier slightly backwards through Modern, yet Frontier is propelling me into Standard.
Because I see it every day. It's awesome.
And I know a lot of people don't realize this about what Frontier is doing, and it's glue. And it's glue that's holding people in the game. And I really, really love that as new sets come out, again, like this set, so many ideas that you need to brew within in Frontier translate to Standard quite a bit. Like almost 50% of your deck is good. So,
well, Maddie, you know me. I played my Frontier deck in a Modern event, and the Standard deck that I have built tonight, I'm taking it to a Modern event. Not because I think it's a modern viable deck, but because I just want to play the deck. I'm just excited to play it.
Well, I think we've got some secret brews that, you know, the hype garage has been working on here. We've got some interesting stuff that we
can't
talk
about
yet.
There's smoke and soap everywhere.
We are, man. So here's something though that's really interesting. So let's talk about this. Blue-black. Control.
Oh, I didn't even talk about blue-black.
I know. So that's why I wanted to touch on it. So we saw the standard, you know, characters that brew with this deck and do reasonably well at SGG.
Shout out to Jim Davis. He's a master of it.
I mean, these guys are good. But the point is, does that translate, just because their performance is good, because they're a super competent pilot, does that mean that this is actually a deck? I know that is a deck we've tried to look into, and we didn't find the right way to build it. Not saying we're the best, but just like, it looks a lot harder to build it right, I think, than we think. So do we think Pro Tour, like, is that a deck that can even go toe-to-toe with a really refined Jeskai version? I don't think so.
I disagree.
Okay, I love it. I love it. Now tell me how, because I feel like when we watch Jeskai, you know, I'm not talking sideboarding games. This is pre-sideboard, match one. I feel like Jeskai's going to win that. They just have so much inevitability. Yes, the blue-black deck is going to try to just kill or counter everything. And it depends on the build you're running. I've seen a lot of artifact-themed builds that try to put pressure on the board and chintz a little bit on the counter side. So if we see, like, classic hard control, counters, and removal, no, that deck probably is going to do very well. But, you know, as you just dilute that into more, like, I'm playing a lot of artifacts because I want to, you know, use my Tezzeret or something, I'm not so sure.
So I actually got to play against sort of the Inspire control deck where
that's the one I was talking about.
Yeah, they had the ability to go turn one, play a land, and put two Ornithopters in play, or like an Ornithopter, and this is going to sound ridiculous, Cathar Shield. And when I played against this, I was like, your deck is really bad. And then they mana leached me on turn one with Metallic Rebuke. And I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. And then they put on turn three Tezzeret's Touch onto their Cathar Shield, and I had no way to remove it out from under them. And then I died in four turns.
Man, now see, that reminds me of the Ensoul version from Frontier, where, you know, cheap artifact and then, you know, hit you for five. Like, that's some very good early board pressure, and then back that up with counters.
So that's what happened to me. But the thing was, after they untapped, it wasn't just, I attack you for five, I attack you for five, I attack you for five, I do it again, you're dead. What they did was they attacked me for five, and then they played a couple of more do-nothing artifacts, like the Prism that draws you a card when it comes into play, or the Servo schematic that makes a Servo when it comes in or when it dies. And then they cast Herald of Anguish on turn four, which is a 5/5 flyer that made me discard a card and spend 3 mana to kill my creatures. Yeah, like, it was just...
The demon is good.
It was great. It was so fantastic to see. And then, once they had a bunch of do-nothing enchantments in play, they could either sacrifice them to their demon to kill all my stuff, or just hold up one blue for Metallic Rebuke the whole time. Hmm. Also, Revolutionary Rebuff, which is in the main deck of all the Jeskai decks, is just a blank against them.
Oh yeah, it's dead.
So I really do think that there's an artifact control deck. I mean, they also get to Tezzeret and Fatal Push and all those fun cards that we actually want to play with.
And Disallow, yeah.
Right, yeah, and Disallow. And, you know, like, they can Gear Hulk at the end, even though... I think the two good ones.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the Black Gear Hulk too, holy smokes. Yeah. But I think the Demon plus Tezzeret's Touch on, like, a Hope of Gearpur, the 1/1 flyer... Yeah. It's just so much pressure because you need 7 flying power to be able to trade. Because for 3 mana, they can just sack one of their do-nothing artifacts, which they have tons of around, maybe even get some value out of it with Servo Schematic, and -2/-2 your creature, while pressuring your hand. And if they ever get a second demon out, you're discarding 2 cards at the end of your turn, every turn.
Yeah, you can't even run with that. And also, don't forget, the Hope of Gearpur has that clause on it that when it deals damage... silences the opponent, I think.
So check this out. When you deal damage to them, you can then sacrifice it, and their next turn, they can't cast spells. But if you have a Tezzeret's Touch on it, the hope comes back to your hand.
Wow. So you could even just be like, well, now that I've hit you, don't combo off.
I bash you for five, and then sack it, and then play it again so you have it next turn. And then maybe you don't bash for five, but you get to cast all of your big spells with impunity. You just get to tap out and then hit them again. It's unbelievably strong.
Well, you know, I think we need to ask the question, like, where does green-black counters fit in this? Like, that's a question. Is it even good? If two titans are going at each other like that, does green-black get under fast enough? Because it feels too mid-rangey to get under, you know? Maybe, like, a mono-red burn deck might be able to be fast enough against decks like that.
Well, I actually got to play in my first event. So the first time I played this new standard, I played Jeskai combo and went 3-0. It was fantastic. The second time I played green-black. And I'm not one to say, like, I don't want to play this deck, or I'm not into this. But I really didn't want to play green-black. It was not my style. It wasn't something that was exciting me. I was already playing Terminators and Frontier, and if I want to play with counters, I want to, like, play with counters, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. But the thing that the green-black deck has going for it is it is literally a pile of the best cards. It's just Jund. If you could just cast your spells where you go, turn one, play a tap land, get that Hissing Quagmire into play. Turn two, you get to play the Winding Constrictor, Snek, as people like to call it. And then turn three, you play Rishkar. And if they don't interact with you, or your opponent like plays a Saheeli or something like that, not that you really want to tap out before Saheeli, but you then end up with a 4/5 Snake and a 4/4 Rishkar on turn three. If you untap after that, you now have four lands in play, assume you hit your land drops, and both of your creatures tap for mana. So you could then just tap out and jam a 3/3 Walking Ballista, or play a 2/2 Walking Ballista with your 4 mana, and have the ability to bash for 8. So we haven't even talked about playing Verdurous Gearhulk, or a turn 3 or turn 4 Mindrak Demon, and then being able to traverse for any of these pieces that you want. So there's also two different versions of the black-green deck. There's the one that's playing the Energy that has Servant of the Conduit and Aether Hub, and then there's just the black-green version that I played against a couple times on the weekend that's just a pile of good cards. So it's not that there are three archetypes. There's like the aggressive archetype, Mardu, even like you mentioned earlier, towards even mono-red, versus the Jeskai Saheeli, whatever that looks like, versus the green-black counters, whatever that looks like. So there's really, in this rock-paper-scissors meta, it's like rock-paper-scissors-lizard-spock-laser dynamite, you know, like, you know, there's actually different versions of this, so you can pick your style now, which is what I like. It's like ordering shirts from us, you know, the logos are there and you know they're all good, right? And you want them, but you get to pick your style and pick your flavor and mix and match so it suits you.
I get where we're going with this, and I think, you know, Pro Tour is going to be interesting. We never really know.
I'm so excited.
I'm very excited. Let's talk about the one thing though that I guess I know a little bit about of, and we've just been through it, which is branding. Branding the Hype Club and the cast, and, you know, coming up with what we feel is just a really good visual to get around, that you feel like is part of a club that you want to join, or a movement, etc. Now, the Pro Tour recently is, I think they're evolving it a little more to be like an esport, where they're bringing in, like we said, like on Heavy Meta many, many, many years ago, where I really dislike the mega teams, the 10, 15, 20 person teams, because in the end of the day, you just have 20 of the best players in the world get in a room and break the format, and they all have the same deck. And yeah, a couple people played a rogue deck, but the excitement was not there. And now, I think Magic, the pro scene, is really doing a lot of good things, which is they're making smaller teams of 3 to 5.
Six players. Your team has to be 6 players.
6 players. Okay, sorry. And then what that does is it allows people to have options to get behind certain players, which is great. And then they add the level of branding, like team logos and that. I think that is 100% the right move. Now, some of the logos, I think that I'm not even sure how they're doing it. If Wizards is like giving a designer like, hey, this is your team, work with them to come up with a look, or, you know, maybe the teams are just totally all on their own and they're just like, it's up to you to do whatever you can. Some of the teams, the Japanese teams specifically, their brands look amazing with like dirt splashes and samurai characters.
And that's coming from you.
I know, right? I think that stuff looks like it was. We were joking when I went down to the store. We were finalizing merch. I was like, you know, would it be hilarious if I just took a week off work and just said, I'm redoing all the Pro Tour team logos. It's just, I'm going to redo them all cool and just say, here you go, guys. Have an awesome looking Pro Tour, which I just can't do, but it would be great. But the funny thing was, I'm looking at it saying, like, there's people doing some great jobs. I think the Puzzle Quest team, I don't know, they're putting sponsorship up ahead of brand image of the team, which in the end of the day, I don't think is a correct move. And there's some teams that they just half-ass the job. I'm sorry. But overall, I think it's good. Hopefully, Wizards realizes it's not about everyone wearing a jersey. It really is more about, like, repping the brand that you choose. And I think that's really cool. I think this is going to be very interesting. I hope that what it also fosters is a little bit of, I don't want to see five or six teams all shack up in a house and still be a, air quotes, mega team. You know?
Yeah, well, even the pros said that that was getting to be too much, and that's why they started splitting the teams, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. It was Star City Blue and Star City Black, and then now it's it was the Channel Fireball and the Pantheon, Ice. And now it's Channel Fireball Fire and Channel Fireball Ice. And I think that giving teams incentives to work in a smaller group through direct financial compensation, like, your teams do good, you get paid more. That's how this works. Like, that's really awesome. What it's going to do is it's going to not only let us have a lot of fun drafting Pro Tour teams, which you and I are going to do next week or this week. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot of fun doing this. But like you said, it encourages these players to not only rep their brand, but work in a manner that feels realistic to the player aspiring to be a pro. For example, I have 5 friends, and I have 5 friends I really like hanging out with, and I can travel with those friends to GPs, and that's my PT team. Those are my guys, not this, oh, well, all of Star City gets together, and they all write together, and they all do versus videos together, so obviously, playing the numbers, they're, you know, 5% of the entire tournament, they're locked to do good. And that, to me, that's less exciting and less attainable as someone who wants to be a better Magic player. So seeing these 6-person teams brings it down to earth a lot more, and I really like it for that.
I do too. I think this is great. This is going to be really exciting. Now, let's skip ahead because, you know, we're already at 45 minutes. Damn, these episodes are hard. I'm just too used to doing 5-hour episodes.
Hey, let's delete this one and do it again.
No. Zencaster, please record. So let's talk about something that happened. Well, it's been happening consistently over a couple of weeks now, and I think it's really starting to hit ahead. And it infects me a bit because I'm a heavy MTGO user. And that's the lack of confidence right now that we're seeing overall from Wizards. And in Wizards' MO has always been silence. They just counter everything with just not talking about it, which then people let their imaginations go wild. And it usually leads to the wrong outcome. And I feel like at this point, Magic Digital Next kind of was announced. It was kind of hinted at. But there was no follow-up. There was no follow-up on, oh, by the way, MTGO, you're safe or you're not safe. And I understand that from a business standpoint, if they were going to kill the system, they can't tell you they're going to kill the system because everyone leaves. As a player who is invested in the system, I look at that as horrible because it's a rock and a hard place. I don't want you to tell me the system's going to leave, but if you do, I'm leaving. So it feels like I'm forced into getting out, which is also, again, a horrible situation. I just hope that they do realize, and I know Saffron Olive and a bunch of Heath from Traders and Casey from Nexus, they were all running numbers on, like, you know, how much does it make, 100 million a year, 200 million? And it obviously makes a lot of money. We don't know. They'll never publish the numbers. But Magic makes a lot of money, especially MTGO. So I firmly believe that the system isn't going to be just axed one day. We're going to have updates. I just think they have put all their efforts into Digital Next, and they're probably sitting there, and they have no plan. They probably don't have a plan. That's why they're so silent. And that is sad because, you know, you could leave MTGO where it is and just let it keep running and making its money. But all of us who play it, we use it, we like it. We just like to see it given its due. You know, just can you make it not crash? And can my lightning bolts be red and not white? Or whatever color of the week they decide to change colors to. Just little things like that. So hopefully we see an announcement soon. I mean, what do you think? Do you feel like the MTGO lack of confidence is just a small part of the overall lack of confidence in Magic right now?
So I have a unique perspective on MTGO because, A, I have face-to-face games Toronto that I can play at whenever I want, and it's actually a stone's throw from my house. Oh no, now everybody knows where I live. Just go
well,
go to face
the store, dude.
Yeah, go to face and throw a rock in the store. You'll probably hit me. Don't do that. There's lots of breakables. but I have access to, you know, basically whatever I want to play on Magic Online, and I still choose not to because that's not the experience that I'm looking for. So I think the challenge from Wizards is going to be attempting to satisfy so many different people with so many needs at the same time, because I grew up with four older brothers, so I know what it's like to see someone get something that you want, or somebody to get something that you then want after that and not be able to. So for example, let's say totally hypothetical, they give the people who are invested over X amount like an unlimited God account, and they say, okay, yeah, you don't have anything, but you have access to everything, you can play whatever you want. That's gonna make me want it, but I'm not gonna have the avenue to get it because I didn't put the work in at the start. And I currently right now don't really want to play Magic Online because it doesn't function as intended, and I am about the experience. So I'm one of those players who has access to some like an investment in Magic Online. I can play whatever cards I want whenever I want, but I still choose not to because that's not the experience I'm looking for. So,
but I have to interrupt because you have the option. Okay, you have the option to just at any time get paper Magic games in. I think, you know, you look at me where I don't really have that option. Yes, I can come down, but time is my restrictor. So where I look at MTGO isn't necessarily I'm playing. I obviously want to play paper over MTGO every time I can. It's just I don't have that option a lot. So for me, it's the best secondary option I can, and that's important. So I feel like, you know, I'm not saying MTGO is better or worse than paper, and that they're just two different ways to play the game for two different people that don't have options.
And that's what I'm trying to get at, is that you're not trying to satisfy both people with this new Magic Digital Next. You're not trying to make people want to go from playing paper to playing Magic Online. You're trying to create the expected experience that Magic Online players have been waiting for literally since the beginning of Magic Online.
Pretty much. Now, I have to interrupt because there's something awesome that I just found out about, and I don't know if you know this, but have you ever heard of playing Magic over Skype? Paper Magic over Skype.
No, what are you talking about?
I know, right? I just
we're stopping the cast. We're playing Magic right now.
No, seriously, this is insane. I heard about this just yesterday. I may have all the details wrong, but
probably,
yeah, exactly right. I think I have the gist of it though. Here's the gist. So the gist would be me, you. We both have Skype. We both have cameras, right? We both have a Hype Club playmat in front of us.
Obviously.
So what we would do is take our camera and point it down just like a coverage feature match at our own board state. And we would play paper Magic. So I'm at my screen. I maximize my screen. I'm seeing your board state. You maximize my screen. You see my board state. And we just play Magic.
You realize that, we're never getting any work done ever again.
I don't know how this works. Maybe you need it. We're going to have to jury rig some crazy like camera holder, but
that's okay. You and I will try that. That'll be our goal. That'll be our dedication to the fans this week is like before the cast next week, the cast next week, we're going to try this.
I don't know how exactly we get the cameras to work right. But in my head, when someone told me this, I was like, oh, because they laughed at me when I brought this article. I was like, hey, you know, what do you think about MTGO? And their answer was like you. They're like, look, I don't really play it. I play paper. Decks are expensive. I'm not going to go buy this deck again. And they're like, why would you even do that? And I'm like, well, there's no real option. There's just the free crappy options, the software that sucks. He's like, no, man. He goes, you just play on Skype. I'm like, you can't play on Skype. And he told me, he walked me through how he does it. He plays his brother who is in the military, so he's, you know, off in another country. He's like, yeah, we just play like this all the time. And I'm like, it doesn't really work. He's like, actually, it works really good.
Yo, okay, so that will be our mission
It's our hype mission.
Our hype mission for you guys were, A, we're going to make more soap because you and I are just totally filthy. But
it's been a hard week, man.
It's, oh, man, you're telling me.
Fridges don't stay on. It's crazy. Let's talk about one last thing, because I know we talk a little bit like what Magic's doing wrong a lot, but we don't really talk about what are they doing right. So let's talk about one thing before the show closes, and that is the standard rewards program that, and it's kind of the F&M, the whole thing works together, and Wizards announced this new program for stores, which is essentially, hey, if you're a player and you come to 6 standard events in 10 weeks, you basically get an alternate art land. So that's interesting. I mean, it's free, so hey, whatever. And if you're playing standard every week, it's just a free thing you may get. So I'll take that as what it is. It's not necessarily what I would do. I think there's other cards that would generate a lot more excitement than an alternate art land, but I'll leave that where it is, because I think the bigger concern is the F&M promos, which you know drive attendance the most.
Well, they got one of them right this time.
They did, and I don't want to be negative, but man, it's miss, nailed it. Aether Hub promo looks absurd.
I'm in love.
Frankly, I wish I could just pre-order them and just be like, can I get those? Because those are gorgeous.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why the other ones. And maybe it's just, you know, they're legacy things that were put into motion last year and they're just really far ahead. And, you know, hopefully maybe after Aether Hub we see Push and some other fancy stuff, which I would be really nice. Because I think, you know, cards like Push that are Eternals format staples, they're just like when Path of Exile was the F&M promo, that was crazy.
Yeah, Serum Visions too. That was amazing. Yeah.
I think we need, I hope they realize that like that's a really great way to get attendance up, like just to give us the cards that we kind of play with.
I don't know, or cards that have guaranteed inherent value,
like because Rogue Refiner,
even if you don't play even if you don't play Fatal Push in your deck and you win one, you are now up value that you can then trade to somebody else for cards you do need to help finish your standard deck. I'm super anal about my cards matching.
Yes,
and it's going to be very, very difficult for me to get a set of these lands, because what they should have done is given you a playset. Because you say that they're free, but they're not free. You have to build a standard deck. You have to come to 6 standard events. That's not free. That's your time. No. That's your money. That's your investment. And yes, you want to play standard already. That's great, because fortunately, we're in a standard environment where there's lots of options and it's really fun. But what they should be doing, because it's just a button to print cards, is giving you an entire experience you want to play with. Not one card's not good enough. That's what I have to say about that. One card for 6 events is not good enough. It should have been a playset.
I think too, a standard player, like who's a dedicated standard player, that's where we're hurting. You know, that's where the game at the ground level, bricks and mortar stores, that's where this game needs help right now. You know, yeah, it needs help online, but it really needs support there. I think you could give a little bit more. Just my opinion. And maybe, you know what it is, because we don't have all the details, maybe the land pack is just a first suggestion. Like, who knows? Maybe they'll give other cards down the road. I think it's a good vehicle. I think anything that, like, rewards players. I still love the old school player rewards. I don't, like, things like that really, man, we need more value back in the game.
Yeah, I collect all those old player rewards, right? Like, I picked up my F&M Shocks from FaceToFaceGames.com. I got, I have Shrapnel Blast for Frontier, which was an F&M promo. But you know, we always talk about shiny stuff on the show, so let's maybe pick. I don't know. Did you have a favorite promo from back in the day?
Yes,
maybe it does not Frontier. What's your favorite one, Maddie?
Okay, there's no doubt about it. The very first thing.
Doubt about it.
There is. There's just no doubt. When I came back to the game. And it was the Zendikar lands that really visually, like, I had to stop and say, what's going on here? The next thing, though, that got me, like, it was something that took me a long time to find and afford, was the Full Art Lightning Bolt.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Promo Full Art Lightning Bolt. When I saw that, they were $30, I think, at the time, or $20, and I was like, oh, that's a lot of money for a Lightning Bolt, which, you know, is a common that I had, like, 18 of, and I was like, I'm not paying that. But it was something that it just always sat there. And I was like, oh, man. And then, you know, they started to disappear. And then, it's $30. Now it's $40. So I finally, I was like, couple years ago, I was like, my modern deck just doesn't feel right. And I bought four. It was kind of expensive. But those are my Lightning Bolts now. And they are my personal favorite card of all time. It just looks the most beautiful ever. It doesn't need explanation. It's a Lightning Bolt. Everyone knows what it does. And I feel like that is like, if you could say, what does Magic need for these, like, I don't want to use elite, but those enfranchised players that want something different, that. It's not Expeditions. It's that.
Those cards were named aptly too as player rewards.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, and you know, obviously the Cryptic Command. I have two of those. They are my, you know, people's like, how can you play with Texas Cryptic Commands? I'm like, what are you talking about? That I have that card memorized, man. Counterbounce, tap, draw. And like, what I laugh at is when you play with the card, it forces you to play better because you got to remember all the modes. I'm not saying these are, you know, hey, you're a beginner player, go buy a $70 Cryptic Command foil. But I'm just saying, like, it's a nice thing to, it's like leveling up your character in an MMO, you know? You get to the point where your deck is your character and it's like, yeah, I know this deck. I know how it plays. I mean, and Tony is like a level million. His stuff is so good. I look at it, I'm like, oh man, I gotta get to work.
and honestly, the things that I like to play with, because I like to collect foils, and I feel like they give me a little higher resale value in the future as long as they don't bend on me. Yeah. But honestly, the best looking Magic cards I've ever seen are the ones that the Proxy Guys makes.
Well, yeah. Well, we can get to that another episode. I would even have him on and talk about it because I have played, you know, cards that he does that are just, they're not human. They're not even, it's like I went to another alternate reality. And his understanding of offering you a Magic experience themed is so crucially insane. Like his old school modern Redux versions, that's bonkers.
The best cards he makes are your birthday cards, Maddie.
Dude, the Obi-Wan Kenobi custom cards every time, which I have a playset of Modern or Master, or what is it? Monastery Mentors as Obi-Wan Kenobi, who makes Jedi tokens. It's, dude, that is like, I almost want to frame that. I don't even want to play that anymore. It's so valuable to me.
Just thinking about them, like, I had the biggest smile on my face. Actually, Proxy Guy is one of the only Twitter, if you don't follow the Proxy Guy, you're doing it wrong. Just, you're just straight up doing Twitter wrong.
He makes you happy.
Like, every day, every single day, I look at his work and I just smile. It's just so phenomenal. And I can't wait to play the cube in Vegas. I can't wait.
If you're going to Vegas, just like stay in touch, tweet us. We are going to be doing that a couple of times, and it's an experience. If you get a chance to, you'll talk about forever because it's just insane. It's a one of a kind. You just can't buy it. You can only experience it. But let's wrap up the show real quick because last week we didn't talk about it, and I'm getting emails and DMs about it, and that is the format box. Now the format box is a way to store/sort/organize your collection. And it's been an evolution process that I've subtly been doing, but I saw Tony do to a really, he did it. He nailed it, especially with Frontier. And I think my evolution of like organizing cards has always been sloppy because, you know, whatever, but with Frontier, especially, I'm like, okay, now I need to go and I want a box of cards that are all Frontier cards because I don't know what decks I want to play and I'm kind of investing into the format over a deck. So what we've done is we take all the Frontier cards playable. Tony chooses to do everything alphabetical. I choose to do it more like color. But the goal is sleeve the playables and then you can, you know, leave the semi-unplayables to the side. But, you know, because you don't want to invest $1 billion in sleeves. But if you have your whole playable sleeved in one sleeve color, you can move and alternate through decks very quickly, which I find so refreshing because looking for cards is the worst part of building decks. I hate looking for them. I just want to grab them, put them in the deck, and go. What are your thoughts on the format box?
The reason I went with straight alphabetical is twofold, really. One, it's a lot easier to sort in stages. For example, I'm looking at my dining room table right now, and it is an apocalypse of cards that need to go away. But what I do is I just sort them by letter and put them in the letter where they're supposed to go. So I put all the A cards in the first slot, B, whatever, C. S is the only real problem because it's actually like 25% of the entire format starts with the letter S. And then beyond that, I can then alphabetize within letters. So I take all my rares and anything that I feel like should be in the sleeve for protective value and playability. And then everything else, and you didn't see this, Maddie, because I hadn't got there yet, but I take all the commons and uncommons that I just bought from the format. When I bought into Frontier, I bought 8 copies of every single card in the format. Oh, and I know. Hey,
you're
well,
so crazy.
Just do it big. This is right. I'm gonna practice what I preach.
You know what? In 2 years, we're gonna be. I'm gonna look at you and say, "Damn, why didn't I do?" It's smart, man. It makes sense. Long term, it makes sense.
So now I take all my quote unquote unplayables and I put 4 or 8 or sometimes up to 10 in a penny sleeve. So the next thing that does is it shows me in the box which cards are rare and which cards aren't rare. So I know if I'm looking for an A rare, I can look through half as many cards, and once they're sorted sort of that way, you don't really need to sort them by alphabet because your A is only, you know,
10 cards.
I probably have 35 different cards to start with A. Okay. But when I'm looking for a rare, I only have to look through 12 of them because I know what's sleeved. Yeah. I know the rares are sleeved. So why this is exciting for me now to start and exciting for you, Maddie, to move forward is the common uncommon play sets that Face to Face Games Toronto has been pre-selling for each new set. Because now when I get these common uncommon play sets, they're already sorted for me. I take them out, I put them into penny sleeves, and then I just, because they're already alphabet sorted when I get them, I just put them into my box and everything's perfect. It takes me maybe 25, maybe 20 minutes to get an entire common uncommon playset of a new set sorted and put away into my box, so exactly where I know. When I went looking for my Rogue Refiners, it took me 5 seconds to find them. I knew exactly where they were because they weren't in the S section. When I go and look for Shrapnel Blast, it takes me a lot longer.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say, the one thing that really sucks is when they use an old card and they reprint it, and you're like, oh, I know I have an old edition somewhere. Oh, like Shocks. I tried to look for my old Shocks. I gave up.
Yeah, that's because they're an S card, right? They were too hard to find.
Yeah. Well, they're just because I have old versions I may want to bring out, but I never put that in the Frontier box. So I'm like, that wasn't legal before. But you know what, though? The one thing about it is that I really like, when you're brewing, this is where I find it very valuable. When you're brewing and you're like, okay, I just want to quickly look through stuff. Of course, I use MTGO because it's obviously faster, but it's also really nice to just say, oh, okay, these are interesting, you know, like, you know, because I do mine by color, so my brewing process is a little different where I'm like, I'm looking for a blue card. What works at, you know, a 2-drop? And I just grab my stack of, like, sleeve blue cards that I know all work. I'm like, oh yeah, there's this, you know. It's an interesting way to do it. I mean, everyone's going to have their own personal preference, but.
Well, I want a quick shout out to Nick, the original designer of the Terminators deck, because every time he comes over, he doesn't have access to all the cards the way that I do, and he loves to brew, and he always helps me out with these crazy great deck ideas. Like I said, original deck designer of Terminators. But when he came over, he's like, oh, I want to build elves. And I just handed him my box and then kept playtesting with my friends. And, you know, 15 minutes later, he's like, got my deck. Let's go play FNM.
Oh, and you know what? Huge shout out. I'm so sorry I didn't remember your name. But the guy when we were playing Frontier last night on Saturday night who was new, he just came down because he'd heard about the store and he was talking to us. Shout out to the new guys, man. Shout out to anybody that's new to the cast, new to Frontier, new to Standard, new to Magic. You know, jump on the hype train, come on with us.
There's lots of room.
You know, steer that ship to positivity.
Yeah. Choo-choo! Grab your scarves.
grab your scarves, jump on a cat, and, you know, sing the song, man. Next week, folks.
See ya.
Bye-bye.